This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, May 19th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the other winner of the Pulitzer Prize. There were two Pulitzer Prizes for poetry announced last month. Robert Hass, who also won the 2007 National Book Award, was one, and he and his book Time and Materials seem to have gobbled up the lion's share of attention that comes with the prize. The other winner, is that fair to say?
Fine.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's true. And that's the other winner. The other winner was Philip Schultz for his book Failure, which was published by Harcourt. Philip Schultz is the author of five collections of poetry and the founder of the Writer's Studio in New York City. And he joins me in a studio in New York to read a few of his poems. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Curtis.
I'm wondering if, before I even ask you a question, if we can go straight into a poem, because I think this poem reveals a lot about the type of poetry you write and who you are as a poet. Could I get you to read What I Like and Don't Like, which is so straightforward that I think it requires no introduction.
Okay. What I Like and Don't Like. I like to say hello and goodbye. I like to hug but not shake hands. I prefer to wave or nod. I enjoy the company of strangers pushed together in elevators or subways. I like talking to cab drivers but not receptionists. I like not knowing what to say. I like talking to people I know but care nothing about. I like inviting anyone anywhere. I like hearing my opinions tumble out of my mouth like toddlers tied together while crossing the street, trusting they won't be squashed by fate. I like greeting card cliches but not dressing up or down. I like being appropriate but not all the time. I could continue with more examples, but I'd rather give too few than too many. The thought of no one listening anymore, I like that least of all.
That was Philip Schultz reading What I Like and Don't Like. And that last thing about the thought of no one listening anymore, is that a worry about poetry in general, or is that a worry about your poetry in particular?
Well, it would be more personal. No, I don't worry about poetry not being listened to, because in my experience, that isn't an issue. But certainly there's always the fear that what I have to say won't find an audience.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly it has found a new audience with the Pulitzer Prize. Did that totally come out of the blue for you?
Absolutely. It was a complete surprise, even the way I heard about it, by my wife and 8-year-old son finding me in the dog park, of all places.
Here in New York, in Washington?
No, in East Hampton, uh-huh. Where we live.
Okay.
She had just seen it on the internet shortly after it was announced, and they found me, and they came running, and it wasn't on my mind. Mm-hmm. I was worrying about several other things that I had to do. I had to get back home for a tutorial, and my dog wasn't getting enough exercise. I certainly wasn't, and I was complaining that she wasn't moving quickly enough. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly everyone was running, and I don't think I've stopped running since.
Now, dogs play a huge role in this book. In fact, I can't think of a book of poems that has more about dogs than this one. In fact, you have perhaps the longest dog poem in Western literature in this book.
But I'll make Guinness for something, right?
Yeah. But I wanted to see if I can get you to read one of those dog poems, and also before you do, if you could tell me why dogs are so important to you as a person and to you as a poet.
That's a interesting question. You would think I would have been asked that before, but I haven't.
Hmm.
I was wondering the same thing the other day when I was admiring my two-and-a-half-year-old Border Collie mix. I play Frisbee with her while playing catch with my 8-year-old son simultaneously in the morning before he goes to school. She has like a computer in her head. It's just inbred. She knows no matter where you throw it, she's there waiting for it. It's pure physics and
mm-hmm.
math.
Mm-hmm.
And my sons can't do it. I can't do it. She just knows where it's going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
What incredible creatures they are. There's just something about, you know, all the cliches about living in the moment where they're able to actually do that. They insulate themselves from trouble.
Mm-hmm.
and even from pain by doing that. So I've always admired that and try to model myself after that. And they're also great love creatures.
Yeah. Now, I live in a neighborhood in Brooklyn which is full of young families like mine. And the people there can be divided into two people. There are dog people, right. And then there are people with babies or young children. And yet you've had both.
Yeah, right. So, at the same time, right.
So your love of dogs is not an escape from the human.
No.
It's a reflection of something about that you wish some qualities in dogs that you wish you had personally, or
a truer answer to your question. It wasn't that I just hadn't yet thought of it until now. That when I was young, it was a very chaotic background, a neighborhood full of immigrants and one layer after another, and then Holocaust displaced people on top of everything else, and a lot of struggle. And the animals I had represented the only civilization that seemed reasonable or that I could understand. And I think I sought refuge with, I had cats, and the dogs I had were just really essential to me. There was a loyalty there and that I didn't find in the world around me, which was very puzzling.
Mm-hmm. So can I get you to read one of your dog poems?
Sure. My dog. His large black body lies on his bed across the room, under the French doors, where he used to sleep, watching me. The vet said to cover him with a blanket, but I can't. 2 hours ago, he moaned loudly and let go of his life. My wife dreamed of his death in Paris, but didn't tell me. I drove home from the airport, imagining him at the door, tail wagging. He introduced me to my wife in a dog run, stood proudly beside me at our wedding, handsome in a red bow tie. He faced wherever I was, sat staring out the window if I was away. If you haven't loved a dog, you'll find it hard to believe he knew it was time to die, but wanted to wait 2 weeks for me to come home. I'll spread his ashes at the beach where we walked nearly every day for 12 years, this gentle creature following me the mile and a half to the breakers and then back to our car.
That was Philip Schultz reading My Dog. Now, it's an elegy for your dog that died. The only thing I would quibble with in this poem is the 2 weeks. I mean, he may have known you were away and were coming home, but he didn't know it was going to be 2 weeks.
No. They have almost no sense of time.
Right.
But he, from what the vet explained, he clearly was dying and could have died, and it was very likely and possible that he held on. We wanted to know why he did. For me to come home.
Mm-hmm.
That dogs sometimes do that. They worry where you are, and when you come back, he died within hours of my coming back.
Mm-hmm. Apart from dogs, the other major theme that seems to run through the book is your father.
Right.
And comes up oftentimes in the same poem as a dog does. And I'm wondering if you could read one of your father poems. I think we decided one early in the book that's called Specimen. Could you read that?
Sure.
Is there anything you want to say
idea of the book, the failure, comes from my father died penniless, bankrupt, didn't leave enough money to bury himself for us to bury him. And he was seen by the community and the family as a failure. This was I heard about it immediately from people. And even though this is a subject I dealt with individually in poems, right from the beginning, I never dealt with it to the extent I did here.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lunch with a friend once, and we were talking about our fathers, and he had a very similar experience, and it was surprising to me because I don't think men share things like that very easily.
Mm.
And I had never had a conversation where I went so much into my own past with someone. And then I began to wonder how common experience, because failure certainly is a large taboo, an American taboo. I mean, success we talk about, but we don't talk about failure.
Mm.
And on the way home, I wrote The One Truth, and that led to Failure, the title poem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back and rewrote other poems and saw that
that subject was in a lot of them. I just hadn't, that extra turn of the screw, gotten to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that represented a pool, a reservoir of feeling that I have spent as much time avoiding, as, or more time avoiding, perhaps, than dealing with.
And why do you suppose it's, you're now, what, 60-something?
63.
63, and your father died when you were?
18.
18, that's a long time.
Yeah.
And why do you think it's coming up now?
Because I am a father, because I have this distance. I see my sons, and I see my importance to them, and I see what I probably, what was going on with me when I was young. He was an immigrant and struggling to survive, and there wasn't much time to enjoy a family.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the parallels and the fact that I'm happy, and looking back at a very unhappy time in my life, it gives me a little more courage, and I have more perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I have more sympathy for him and what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and the thought that this didn't just happen to me. It's just the unspoken story in this country, especially among immigrants, or that immigrant mentality that, you know, it's like Darwin. Every species has to overproduce by 1,000 in order for a very small minority to survive and adapt. And you hear the success stories.
Right.
And for every immigrant that probably succeeded, there were 10 to 100 ones who didn't. And it's shameful and unacceptable.
Yeah.
And if your story's part of that, you don't talk about it or deal with it.
Can I get you to read Specimen?
Yes.
Here's Philip Schultz reading Specimen.
I turned 60 in Paris last year. We stayed at the Letitia, where the Gestapo headquartered during the war. My wife, two boys, and me. And several old Vietnamese ladies carrying poodles with diamond collars. Once my father caught a man stealing cigarettes out of one of his vending machines. He didn't stop choking him until the pool hall stunk of excrement and the body dropped to the floor like a judgment. When I was last in Paris, I was dirt poor, hiding from the Vietnam War. One night in an old church, I considered taking my life. I didn't know how to be so young and not belong anywhere, stuck among so many perplexing melodies. I loved the low white buildings, the ingratiating colors, the ancient light. We couldn't afford such luxury. It was a matter of pride. My father died bankrupt 1 week before his 60th birthday. I didn't expect to have a family. I didn't expect happiness. At the Letitia, everyone dressed themselves like specimens they had loved all their lives. Everyone floated down red velvet hallways like scintillating music you hear only once or twice. Driving home, my father said, "Let anyone steal from you and you're not fit to live." I sat there, sliced by traffic lights, not belonging to what he said. I belonged to a scintillating and perplexing music I didn't expect to hear.
That's Philip Schultz reading Specimen. There's a couple of things that occur to me as I hear you read that, and one of them is that there's a class feeling in the poem. You're at a fancy place, you're with your family, and then while you're there, you're recalling your father's failure and poverty.
Well, I mean, in fact, we were there by mistake. It wasn't we couldn't stay at the place across the street, and this was a very expensive place that we somehow stumbled into.
Mm-hmm.
I do think, yes, to the answer your question, that we had never been in such a fancy place. It was, and then to hear that the Gestapo had chosen this place to set up as their headquarters because it was the fanciest hotel in Paris. And it did remind me of our background, a poor background, where everything was struggle and the kind of brutal way of viewing the world, live and die, that my father had to endorse.
and how I was the recipient of that.
Like when he says, let anyone steal from you and you're not fit to live.
Right. Mm, that sensitivity or art or something like that mm-hmm. didn't belong there. Mm-hmm. So it's a very good question, because somehow being in there, the starkness of that and my own background, you know, where do you belong? Where does one belong? I guess that's a theme in the book. Mm-hmm. He didn't belong to anything. He didn't believe in belonging to anything. He was a Jew, didn't belong to a synagogue or belong to God or belong to a religion. And also, in order to do that, you have to be a member of your community and make enough money to pay for belonging.
We have time for one more poem. We've done a dog poem and a father poem. Can you think of another one you'd like to read?
Well, the first one that pops to mind is Husband, about my wife or about our marriage.
Let's do that one.
It's a small one, but sure.
So this is Philip Schultz reading Husband.
What could be more picturesque than us eating lobster on the water, the sun vanishing over the horizon, willing once again to allow us almost any satisfaction? William James said marriage was overlooking, yes, but also overlapping. Opinions, histories, the truth of someone not you sitting across the table, seeing the you can't bear to, the face behind the long fable in the mirror. Freud said we're cured when we see ourselves the way a stranger does in moments. Am I the eye she tried to save, still lopsided with trying to be a little less or more, escaping who I was a moment ago? Here now, us sipping wine in this candlelit pause, in the charm of the ever-casting sky, every gesture familiar, painfully endearing, the eye of me, the she of her, the us only we know, alone together all these years. Call it what you like, happiness or failure, the discreet curl of her bottom lip, the hesitant green of her eyes, still lovely with surprise.
Philip Schultz's Pulitzer Prize-winning book is Failure, and it's published by Harcourt. Thanks for coming onto the program.
Thank you, Curtis.
You can read a new essay about Philip Schultz on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Also, the other winner of the 2008 Pulitzer Prize was Robert Haas, and you can download our podcast with him. Click on Audio and Podcasts, then click on Poetry Off the Shelf for the archives. Let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.